Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the OIES China Energy Program. My name is Anders Hovey, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute, and on the 8th of August, 2023, the China Program published an issue of the Oxford Energy Forum on the geopolitics of energy and China. This podcast is part of a series drawing on these very rich OEF contributions. The aim of the forum was to think about China's role in the geopolitics of energy, both fossil fuels and new energy supply chains, both from China's perspective and the view from other regions around the world. In today's podcast, the first in our series, I'm speaking with Herbert Crowther, a 2023 Schwarzman Scholar and returning analyst with the Eurasia Group. Herbert has authored an article for our Oxford Energy Forum entitled Market Dilemmas and Strategic Balancing Acts, Chinese Renewable Manufacturers in an Era of Geopolitical Competition. So first of all, Herbert, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Anders. Very excited to be here.
You write that new policies in Europe and the US mean that China's dominance in renewable energy faces considerable uncertainty, but China is set to retain its, what you call, unavoidable presence in global supply chains. Why do you think that is?
Today, Chinese renewable firms are among the most dominant in many green subsectors. So as many listeners may be familiar with, Chinese firms occupy over 80 or 90% of value chains in industries like solar and battery components, and are similarly relevant in areas like wind, electrolyzers, metals, etc. And in my opinion, a major question over the last 12 months has been, how does this existing dominance from Chinese renewable firms interact with new green policy initiatives from the US and EU? So in the US, the Inflation Reduction Act, in the EU, the Green Deal, all of these policy initiatives seek to bring some of that green dominance out of China and into the US or EU. However, despite all of this, and even in, I think, very kind of best case scenarios for some of these policy initiatives, these Chinese firms are likely to maintain a very strong presence. Why is that? I think there's a few main reasons. The first is that the primary market for these Chinese firms who lead the world today is still the domestic Chinese market. So over the last 5 or 10 years, China has pursued a lot of policy programs to really expand the domestic demand of these components. For example, in solar, China is over 3 times larger than the next largest market by installed capacity, installing almost 100 gigawatts of solar last year, which is really monumental. And so the main strategic area for most of these Chinese renewable firms remains the domestic market, which is not necessarily impacted by some of these green industrial programs in the US or EU. Secondly, the local policy support environment in China remains very supportive today. So that means that when a Chinese renewable company wants to construct a new factory, something along these lines, they still benefit from land rights from local governments, from tax incentives, from sometimes even direct investment. This is also crucial to the overall strategic planning of these companies and is similarly unaffected by a lot of the new initiatives in the US or EU. And lastly, I think the Chinese presence in a lot of these areas is increasingly informed by its leadership on a lot of technological development in these industries. So the dominance which Chinese firms see today in a lot of these subsegments helps them have some of the largest R&D budgets, some of the most experience in commercializing R&D breakthroughs, some of the strongest relationships with suppliers and installers, etc., which means that even over the longer term, these companies maintain a very important presence. So even if the green industrial policies in the US or EU are successful, which I think they may be, these Chinese firms will still remain very important actors, and the relationship between these Chinese firms and their US and EU peers will also be extremely important.
Those three reasons that you gave, they interact with each other to bolster China's position in the global supply chain. Now, you write that Chinese clean energy companies face several new dilemmas, one of which is political risk in investing abroad. How does political risk play into clean energy companies' strategies right now?
So I think this is a very exciting part of this whole picture. And just before discussing a little bit of how political risk plays into these decisions, I think it's important to caveat that many of the dilemmas which we're discussing are very new. So the Inflation Reduction Act in the U.S. is actually literally 1 year old today, our day of recording, August 7th. The EU Green Deal response to the IRA is even younger than that. And so as Chinese companies consider political risk, they are in just as much of a sort of analytically uncertain position as we are today commenting from the outside. But how exactly does political risk impact these decisions? The first way it impacts these decisions is that when Chinese renewable energy firms now consider setting up factories in other countries, particularly in this example, the US or EU, they need to consider their local government interactions, right? So they need to interact with state governments, with county governments, with local economic development boards, et cetera. And they need to negotiate many of the same considerations, which they do with Chinese local governments. These are things like land rights, tax incentives, workforce development metrics, so on and so forth. However, in a lot of these foreign countries, these local political dynamics are much less stable, so to speak, than they may be in China. So in the US earlier this year, there was a high profile example of one state, Virginia, rejecting a potential CATL battery plant primarily on political grounds. So as Chinese firms consider where to put factories, how to protect those factories on a long-term basis, local politics becomes an area of consideration, which it isn't in the same way for a domestic Chinese factory. However, there are some positive examples of this, even in this calendar year. For example, Longi Solar, which is one of the largest solar producers in the world, started a new factory in Ohio, which is a blue-collar state, which is a positive example of how some of these local government interactions can still be fruitful, even in a maybe theoretically more challenging jurisdiction. Secondly, there's major political risk associated, in my view, with long-term market access, even when Chinese firms construct a factory in the direct market. So to continue with the kind of US IRA solar example, there is nothing today which prohibits a Chinese firm from partnering with an American firm, building a factory in the US that meets IRA standards, and then benefiting from all of the tax benefits associated and also getting full market access, that is, without the trade barriers that Chinese solar products would other receive. But that's not really explicitly guaranteed, right? So there's nothing to say that 5, 10, or 20 years from now, some of the local or federal politics behind that might not change. So you could imagine a situation where further restrictions or criteria come into play around how much of the value chain happens in that specific factory versus just being finalized in that factory, further restrictions on input materials which are used at that factory. All of these things can really change the long-term financial planning that might underpin the initial investment decision. And lastly, I think an important note is that there's some sort of two-way political risk involved here as well for the foreign partners that may work with these Chinese producers in other countries. So a US energy developer who wants to work with some of these Chinese producers also needs to consider their own domestic reputational risk with local politicians, with federal policymakers. All of these things become very sensitive and are really new considerations for Chinese firms as they approach this potential market.
You already mentioned that China is now the leader in several of the major clean energy technologies. How do you see that playing into Chinese renewable manufacturers' strategies abroad?
Yeah, I think this is such an interesting question because it's really a complete role reversal of the traditional image of Chinese companies and foreign investment. Because for much of the last 30 years, right, it's been foreign firms investing in manufacturing plants within China where technology transfer and intellectual property rights were a primary consideration, primary component of negotiations. But now, as we mentioned, due to the dominance of these Chinese firms, they find themselves in a technologically leading position. And as they consider going into these other markets, now these other markets may be more proactive and hoping for some kind of technology transfer for their own domestic economy. This is also a very new area of consideration, which we're just getting the first kind of signals on. But I think the overall picture is likely to be constructive on Chinese firms' views on technology transfer for a couple of reasons. The first is that technology transfer and technology superiority writ large is only one component of the competitive advantage that Chinese manufacturers have in this space. This combines with things like their general manufacturing know-how, which goes beyond just renewable energy industries. It combines with some of this very strong local government support in China, which we've discussed earlier. So all of these things come together and combine to inform the overall competitive advantage of these Chinese firms. And I think they won't view any one specific instance of technology transfer as really threatening their overall strategic and economic health. Secondly, if Chinese firms are very hard line on technology transfer, this likely limits the markets where they are able to pursue new investments and where they're able to get new market access, right? So if they strike a very challenging tone on technology transfer, I think some of the largest markets today in terms of future green growth look much more challenging for Chinese investment. That's the US, that's India, that's the EU, all countries where the overall bilateral relationship is a little bit more challenging. And if Chinese firms are not kind of constructive on the technology transfer component, striking deals in those places also, I think, becomes much more difficult. So all of those things go to suggest that Chinese firms, I think, will tolerate some technology transfer and be constructive on a local level in these foreign countries.
I think it's very clear that the motivation for many of the deals is to bring in some know-how, not necessarily technology transfer in terms of switching the actual intellectual property right, but to really bring in some of the skills, some of the supply chain that enables the energy transition into the local economies that are going to ultimately be purchasing the products, whether they're purchasing them ongoing from China and simply building up their know-how so that they can manufacture some of it locally, or to actually build up a complete supply chain locally. It all depends on know-how, workforce, and having a supply chain, not just intellectual property. How do you think the Chinese government perceives investment abroad by clean energy manufacturers?
I think the view from Beijing today, in most general terms, is still broadly positive. The most important reason for this is that these companies, which are very large Chinese companies, which are important players in the Chinese system, want to do this, right? They see these foreign markets, especially the US and EU, as very high growth, very potentially high margin, very attractive, despite the political risks, which we discussed earlier. And these Chinese companies within China are important taxpayers, they're important local employers, and they're important standard bearers for Chinese firms writ large. So insofar as they really want to pursue these projects, I don't think there's a real central government reason to inhibit that type of planning. Secondly, however, I think there is some soft power benefits associated with some of these major green manufacturing investments by Chinese firms. It contributes to the overall image that Chinese green companies are global leaders on renewable energy technologies, rather than simply China-only firms that foreign consumers get very little direct interaction with. It helps create blue-collar jobs in a lot of areas which previously may have lost blue-collar jobs as manufacturing went into China. And it also contributes to some of this narrative of a kind of green BRI, Green Belt and Road, where China's foreign investments in the energy sector are not the sort of traditional fossil-based investments which we saw for a portion of the kind of 2010s when the Belt and Road was just getting underway. So all of that combines, I think, to present a largely positive view from the government on these investments. Where I do think things may get a little bit more challenging and a little bit more complicated is if some of these projects go poorly. That is to say, there's some sort of labor disputes at the plants, the firms feel that the local governments are not fully holding up their end of the bargain. And if they face a more challenging environment overall, then I think the Chinese government could start to feel a bit more conflicted on the prudence of some of these projects and how they affect the broader commercial relationship with other countries and even spilling over into some of the political relationship as well.
Do you think that the soft power benefit is more in those countries outside of North America and Europe, let's say India or Southeast Asia or Africa, where they would see it sort of more as a purely positive?
Yeah, I think that's correct. Chinese firms, of course, are searching for new high-growth industries writ large and industries where maybe some of these developing economies are still struggling to attract capital, are still struggling to attract localization of supply chains. And given the dominant place of Chinese renewable firms in these subsectors, the same principle applies to why they're relevant to the US or EU as it does to developing countries. And there's also kind of a domestic soft power benefit for China as well, where, you know, they can do more marketing around some of these foreign projects, and these firms can feel more of a global credential. That's a general sign of China's rising commercial ascent.
Where do you think this all shakes out in terms of Chinese firms playing a major and positive role in the clean energy transition outside of China?
I think that insofar as Chinese firms can help potentially bring new direct manufacturing investments to markets which in the last 10 or 15 years have really struggled to do that on their own, it can help really diversify green supply chains globally, de-risk some of the tension underlying them, and facilitate better technology diffusion, technology cost learning curves, etc. This is all positive and assumes that these projects end up going well. It assumes that the political risk components are managed prudently. It assumes that the economics underpinning all of them continue to hold. So I think there's a very strong potential positive story that comes out of this. And it's a story in this high-profile industry, which is much harder to imagine in some of the other high-profile industries that get a lot of attention today, right? It's hard to imagine this in electronics or in other commodity industries, et cetera. However, with that being said, there is certainly a potential negative story which could come out of this as well if these projects face challenges that makes it even harder in the long term for there to be fruitful cooperation on green supply chains and fruitful diffusion of green technology learning curves and all of these things which we just discussed. So I think the jury is really still out. It's an exciting time to observe these projects. And over the next 10 to 24 months, we should get much more indicative clues of the overall trajectory of this type of relationship.
Well, thank you so much, Herbert. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining me and for your contribution to the forum.
Thanks very much, Anders.
A reminder to our listeners that the Oxford Energy Forum on China and the Geopolitics of Energy is available on our website. We hope you'll enjoy reading it and listening to the other podcasts on this fascinating topic.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.